Lord, teach us what we are to know, show us what we are to do, to be your disciples. Amen. Lewis Carroll brought us into the wonderful world, the magical world of Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. And one of my favorite scenes in that story is the time when Alice finds herself at a crossroads. And looking around, she sees up in a tree the Cheshire Cat grinning from a branch above her. And this is what she says to him. "Cheshire Puss," Alice began, "would you please tell me which way I ought to go from here?" "That depends on where you want to get to," said the cat. Begin with the end in mind. Maybe you've heard that from Stephen Covey, who made that phrase popular long after Lewis Carroll. And he made it popular as habit number 2 in his book, 7 Highly Effective Habits for Effective People. And he talked about the kinds of habits a person needs to have in order to follow their values. How to live expressing your values, and that you can't get to where you want to go unless you actually know the destination. But even before Stephen Covey popularized "begin with the end in mind," another Stephen DeShazer, developed some powerful tools in the world of psychotherapy. And he did this at a time when therapeutic practice was pretty much established, in the 70s. And he started a new trend in therapy, a new theory of therapy, known as solution-focused therapy. What a concept, that therapy could have a solution. But the way you describe solution-focused therapy is more like what it is not than what it is. So if you think about traditional psychotherapy, you see it's all about finding out how a problem happens, how it's shown, how it's manifest in a person's life, and then you know kind of what you need to do to resolve it. And this problem-solving approach has been with the field of psychotherapy for decades, established out of the medical model, where symptoms are assessed, and then you diagnose, and then you treat. So this is based on the belief that if I'm a therapist, I need to understand the problem in order to help. And to do this, I gather information about the person's problems, background, ask the right questions about the symptoms, and then assess that problem. Plan and execute a treatment along with the client, of course. But solution-focused therapy, in contrast, aims to help clients by changing and asking questions about a solution rather than focusing on a problem. So in the most basic sense, solution-focused therapy describes itself as a hope-friendly, positive emotion-eliciting, future-oriented vehicle to sustain behavioral change. Now, granted, that is their own statement, but it is quite a different turnaround from the way psychotherapy had been practiced. Now, one of the most well-known tools, if you look up Stephen DeShazer, well, you'll find he is most famous for one of the tools he used with a client, and it's called the Miracle Question. And it's an unusual name, but a really powerful tool. It's the one that ended up what he's most famous for. And it was developed out of some desperation because he was treating a suicidal woman with an alcoholic husband and what they call 4 wild children. I'm not sure the definition of wild, but those of us who've raised children can imagine. So he established this miracle question, and the best way to learn about it is to hear the transcript. And this is the transcript about how it goes. The therapist says to the client, I'm going to ask you a rather strange question, one that requires imagination on your part. Do you have a good imagination? And the client says, I think so. I'll try my best. And so the therapist says, good. The strange question is this. After we talk, you'll go back home. You still have things to do, you've told me. You know, you have some household tasks, maybe helping the children with homework, preparing dinner. After a time, it's time to go to bed. The house becomes very quiet, everyone's asleep, and in the middle of the night, a miracle happens. The problem you brought to me is solved. But because it happens when you're sleeping, you have no idea there was a miracle and that your problem was solved. So, when you're waking up, what would be the first thing you would notice that would tell you there must have been a miracle? The problem is gone. How would you discover this? Well, she plays along and says, I suppose I'd feel like getting up and facing the day instead of burying my head under the blanket and just hide there. And the therapist goes on, suppose you do get up and face the day. What would be one small thing that would be so different that you did this morning? I suppose I would say good morning to my kids in a cheerful voice instead of screaming at them like I did just this morning. And so the therapist pushes more. What would your children respond? How would they respond to that? And she says, they'd be surprised to hear me speak in a friendly way, in a cheerful voice. So they might be a little calmer, but wow, it's been a really long time since that happened. So what would you do then that you didn't do this morning? The therapist asks. Well, I would just crack a joke and put everybody in a better mood. And that's the transcript of the miracle question. Begin with the end in mind. Advent, a new beginning. Jesus said there'll be signs in the sun and the moon and the stars, and on the earth distress among nations confused by the roaring seas and waves. People will faint from fear and foreboding of what's coming upon the world, for the powers of the heavens will be shaken. Now, when these things begin to take place, stand up and raise your heads, because your redemption is drawing near. So, Thanksgiving is over. The world around us is getting very intentional about preparing for Christmas, for better or worse. And as we set up our creche or nativity set in our homes, we see the little models of baby Jesus, usually sleeping, Mother Mary looking beautiful, or I see Mother Mary like this, looking like she just discovered Jesus in the straw. Joseph attentive, the angels singing, the cattle lowing, beautiful, peaceful scene. And today, the first Sunday of Advent, Jesus, the adult Jesus, is standing in the temple teaching about the coming catastrophe, the destruction of the temple by the Romans in 70. But Jesus seems to be talking more about the end of all time, the end of time itself. So it puts our Christmas preparations in a little bit different perspective. Now, it's not the church's intent to spoil the beautiful season of Advent by talking about the end of the world. But Advent is not only a meditative season where we're getting ready to welcome Jesus, to welcome this incredible gift. It's the beginning of a new church year. It's the beginning marked by stories of the end of everything. So it seems that it's important, even at the very beginning, to take the long view, to begin with the end in mind, even here at the start of a church year. Now for Luke, whose gospel we're in this year, this new year starts, this is year C. Luke is our guy for the gospel. The confusion in the heavens and the earth is a sign that human affairs are way off course. So we're ruled by chaos instead of cosmos. War, insurrection, famine, he talks about all of it, plagues, betrayal, all of this has even visited Jerusalem and the people of God. Now you have to wonder for a minute, just what has Luke gotten into anyway? I mean, he is the guy who told the birth narrative. He's the one who set that beautiful scene that we set up our creche about. Jesus, Mary, Joseph, the angels. Why do we have to hear about Jesus telling us about betraying community, disintegrating social order, chaos? And although we Episcopalians have really not done a lot of talk about the apocalypse, the social scientists, the researchers, journalists continue to remind us about it, and they're cranking it up. They talk about climate change that's reaching alarming proportions. Nation states are disintegrating. There are floods and wildfires. Rainforests are disappearing. Gun violence is epidemic. All the signs tell us that we too are headed for chaos. And no one needs a social scientist, a researcher, or even a journalist, please God, to remind us of how we suffered with the global pandemic these past nearly 2 years. But the message of Advent is not just that everything is falling to pieces. We probably don't need Luke to tell us that. And certainly the message is not, God is in his heaven and all is right with the world. No, the message of Advent is that when heaven itself is spinning out of destruction, when every star is falling from the sky and all hell is breaking loose on earth, your redemption is near. Now, how can this be? It can be because God is faithful to God's promise in Jesus Christ. If the end we had in mind, our future, depended on the outcome of the predictable outcome of evil and destruction around us, if that was more than the promise that Christ has made, the despair would overwhelm us. The message of Advent is that we can never take our own projections more seriously than God's promises. When we least expect it, and when there's no evidence for it, God's power comes into this godless world in ways the world could never predict. Just ask Moses, ask Esther, ask Mary and Joseph. So in the end, Advent calls us to raise up our heads, confident and hopeful. So whatever's dark or sick or shaky in life, whatever anxiety wakes me up, haunts me maybe all day long, however unsettled the future appears, our redemption is drawing near. Frightening, bold, and beautiful glimpses of God, that's what Jesus offers us here on the first Sunday of Advent. And it's an offer we should keep in our minds and hearts as we prepare to kneel at the incarnation before Jesus as that gentle baby this Christmas, listening for the still speaking God to call us into the birth of transformation of our world. Amen.